Okay, North Langley, welcome. Here we are. We are welcome to another episode of After Sunday with me, your host, Corey Alstead, and our wonderful lead pastor, Matthew Price.
And we are literally just sitting down here. I'm barely in my seat.
No prep. There's like zero prep on this one.
Corey has no idea what's about to hit him.
I have no idea. Although I did, Matthew just handed me a sheet of paper with a few things on it, so I'm going to glance quickly through it all.
Corey, how was your Halloween? Oh man. We're recording this on November 1st.
Yes. Yep. Day after Halloween.
And my least favorite day of the year was last night. Wow. So let's talk about it.
Okay. Sorry, just bringing it. Halloween's fun. I don't have the same heaviness that you have about Halloween.
So what'd you do?
We didn't do that much last night. We're prepping for a wedding coming up this Saturday. Yes. So we've got lots going on. So we were both a little bit tired, but we handed out candy. Some of our kids were over. Max and Ruby and Leaf were over, and we actually watched some of the hockey game. The Canucks were playing. They ended up winning 5-2.
Nice.
And then we just handed out candy, and it's always funny as the kids get older. You know, like you can get a little cynical because, like, you know, it's like suddenly a 16-year-old kid's there and they're barely dressed up. You know?
Oh, I was laughing so hard about that last night. I was like handing out candy, and I wanted to say like, hope this helps you in college for
your That's right. Hope this helps you. That's right. Cause honestly, it's not looking great. Just joking. No, just kidding. We had a few of those. It wasn't too bad. Then there's some such cute kids. Like I love it. I think Halloween's fun. It's kinda like Mexico has the Day of the Dead, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little different, but
you should learn more about the Day of the Dead.
I've heard some Christian thinkers talk about how it's actually a very important day that we should be embracing more, actually.
Really?
I actually have, yeah. I have like a guy that I follow, and I wanted to...
Was he talking about the Mexican Day of the Dead?
Yep. Like, yeah, it was...
You know, that whole thing's a hoax.
Is it?
Yes.
I think he was talking about Mexican Day of the Dead. I actually don't know.
Well,
I don't know.
So there are these two British historians that have done a bit of a little deep dive into the Day of the Dead, and they say it's like, because people say, oh, it's like connected to like ancient Aztec or Mayan days or something like that, and they're like, that's not the case. It's actually a really popular, like, the Day of the Dead actually it's in the beginning of one of the Bond movies, one of the James Bond movies. Recently, in the last 10 years or so.
Okay.
And so anyway, they start off talking about that, but then I just heard these two historians talk about how there's actually no ancient backing for the Mexican Day of the Dead. It's actually a very new phenomenon. Okay. And so, little product placement, but check out the Rest is History podcast.
Oh, yeah. I like
with
that.
Tom Holland.
Yes, you like Tom Holland.
Yeah, and they do a bit of a the Day of the Dead is not what you think it is. Moment.
Yeah. So my understanding, okay, just remind me real quick. I know this is not actually the topic, but like Day of the Dead is it about like, do you celebrate, is it something about like you celebrate, let's say your grandfather passed away and also, and you, it's like a day to celebrate them and remember them and.
What it is today. Yeah. It's like you set up like a little altar is maybe a weird word for it, but like a table. Yeah. Shrine in your home. And the idea is that it's this kind of, the idea is, people think it's like a syncretism between Catholicism and like, you know, some kind of Mayan or Aztec religion or something.
Yeah.
The idea is that you're welcoming those who've been deceased, who you loved, back to, so that they can see that you love them and enjoy some of the things they loved in life. So you put out like the pastry they loved in life or the,
you know,
it's like a little shrine to them. And so it's, you're supposed to light, my understanding is you're supposed to light their way from the grave all the way to the house.
Guide them home. Yeah. You know what? Now I'm going to go and I'm going to read this guy. Cause I really, this guy, he's super, very, very thoughtful guy. Like he's a, so I'm curious to know, maybe it's just a particular angle from it that he,
sure.
It's like the idea of saying we don't really have, I think my hunch is he might approach it like, you know, in the West, we often, or at least in the West, I know in the, in our culture, we might like to kind of shove that sort of grief under the carpet and we don't want to think too much about death much about, you know, and he's maybe saying like, it's actually worth celebrating, you know, the legacy maybe that some, I don't know, I'm making that up, but I can imagine something like that. So yeah, I'm going to check it out.
Well, today, November 1st is All Saints Day. So the idea is we're remembering the saints who have gone before us.
Yeah.
And then yesterday was supposed to be the holy evening, the hallowed evening, right? Before we remember. I heard one person say it was like remembering particularly the martyrs that that came before.
But you hate Halloween.
Well, I just don't like, I mean, I was talking to you about this yesterday. I feel like there in the 80s and 90s, we were told Halloween is terrible. And we had all these like fall festivals and things that replaced it.
Harvest Night.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
And then I feel like in the last 20 years, this is just my rough timeline of events. we've been so hesitant to like, to say anything, to limit anyone in anything. Right. So like the idea of like listening to music, like you can, like I grew up at a time where my friends were being told, my parents didn't really do this, but my friends were being told, you can't listen to these artists. Mm-hmm. You can't listen to this music.
Yeah. Or movies or
movies.
Totally. Yeah.
And you can't go to the movies. You can't watch this stuff or these TV shows. And so I remember growing up in the thick of that. I felt like I was growing up in the thick of that. Maybe people who grew up in the 70s, 80s, 90s. But then in the last 20 years, I feel like there's been a like, almost like anti-law, antinomianism. that it's like, it's been like, yeah, we're all kind of, I think the good thing is that we're trying to discern the good in art. And say like, oh, okay, well, what is the good? Like I just read this morning in 1 Thessalonians, like to keep what is good. Mm. But then he also says, Paul says to shun what is evil. Mm. So it's like, I feel like we're trying to keep what is good in art.
Yeah.
In the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you and I are probably part of that generation. That's like, hey, watching a Martin Scorsese movie and listening to Radiohead. And I don't know, it's like, oh, we're trying to find the good art in it all. And I feel like with Halloween, the reason I'm lumping that in is that like it moved from like, well, actually let's embrace the good of what is Halloween. Well, you get to know your neighbors. Everyone's having fun. We're giving gifts to each other. A lot of laughs. It's a beautiful evening where you get to know your town, you know?
Yeah.
But like, I'm just wondering about, what is it that we would critique as Christians and say, actually, that's not good. Like, I don't like death. I think death's the enemy. I don't like demons. Mm. Like I was just commenting that like, you know, one of my daughter's friends are going as the devil.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I'm like, well, that actually means something to me. Like the devil is actually Jesus' enemy. And I don't want to celebrate that. And then, you know, thinking about this thing my kids were invited to in their school gym that seemed to be this Halloween thing that the teachers of the school put on for the kids. And I'm like, well, like my middle child struggles with nightmares, right? And and like some of this stuff is like the ghoulishness, the darkness, I'm wondering if we can bring back the good in the 70s, 80s, and 90s that we were critiquing.
Right.
And not just like, it just feels like both of those are extremes. Like,
right. Yeah.
Everything is bad and the worst, or we accept everything and it's all good.
It's like beer. Remember that? Like I grew up in the time we grew up like beer is bad. Anything alcohol is, at least I grew up in, that's maybe not fair, but it was very much shunned upon. And now it's a very normal thing for, you know, whatever. I just, you know, especially like young kind of cool hip pastors, you know, going for like, it's that thing, right? Going for beer.
But not only going for beer, like I feel like it's tolerated that you can be drunk.
Oh,
slightly drunk.
Yeah.
At least that's my experience.
Like I haven't seen that as much, I don't feel like that has been.
To be fair to the listener, I have not seen that in Corey.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
I've not seen that
in
you.
I'm a big proponent of being drunk. Yeah. No, but don't you think that a lot of this is just pendulum swinging? Like, I'm like, it's like, it's always corrections, right? So I feel like there was a lot that needed to be corrected from at least the way I grew up and the culture, you know, the church culture around that was just so superstitious almost, right? Like in some ways, whether it was Halloween or whether it was alcohol or whether it was music or movies or, but then you're right. Maybe now it's like, I'm sometimes surprised and I try not to be surprised in a judgmental way, but if I talk with someone about just what is their regular diet, let's say, of a particular TV show or something, you know, where I'm like, oh wow, okay, you know, yeah, I've kind of stayed away from that one, you know, or whatever. And again, I'm not trying to point fingers or anything, but it's all yeah. So I see what you're saying. There's like this swing over to the other side where it's like anything goes, or not. I mean, not really. I guess but again, I feel like I just actually read this. I think it was the New York Times. Maybe they something. There's a study that they've just finished that, and I don't know the age group. The younger generation, they want less. For instance, explicit sexuality in TV shows and movies, apparently. Awesome. The majority. Like,
yeah, yeah.
So it's, which is interesting, right? Because you got like, you know, you got your Game of Thrones and you got all the, like, there's these over the top, you know, television shows or movies that have this stuff. And now it's like they're doing these studies and you've got this actually quite a massive majority, it sounds like, yeah. That are of younger people that are saying, actually, we'd prefer to not have as much of that in our TV shows and movies. So again, I'm like, oh, that's great. There's a correction. Like,
yeah.
And I know my personality is far, I'm a little bit more chill with that. I think it was kind of the way my dad raised me a little bit that way. Like he was just pretty chill about, he is pretty chill about stuff. Doesn't get like alarmed very easily. So Halloween was never an issue. I just loved it because I was like, man, get lots of candy and it's awesome. And then the whole, you and I talked a bit about the demons and Satan and stuff. And for me, when people would dress that way, I was always just like, oh, whatever. You know, it's like, yeah, that's not what Satan looks like, I'm sure. I don't know what he looks like, but I'm sure it's not that, you know.
Right.
That's a weird Dante something. You know, like there's some sort of, I don't know where we got that from, that idea of the pitchfork and the, mm-hmm. But it's like, you know, whatever. I don't know. I'm like.
Well, but don't you think that like the Halloween carries a bit of a culture of death?
Yeah. Yes. I would say it does. And obviously there's going to be extremes and all sorts of things for sure, but not in, I don't know that I would say glorifying death. Like, I actually don't think that. I think it's more this make-believe. We like to be scared. We like to, I get that. Like, it's kind of fun to go and, you know, get it. We go on rides that give us a scare and stuff. Like, I think as a culture in general, we enjoy little like moments of where it's like, ooh, that shook me out of my normal emotion. Suddenly I feel a little bit chilled or scared, but it's not as though I don't think the majority, at least by far the majority of people are like, man, like I just love death and I just want to, I'm like, no, I don't think so. I think most people are like, it's kind of scary and kind of fun. That's
right. It. But like, I mean, like if I jumped around a corner and said, boo.
Yep.
I think you'd find that funny. You'd be like, oh, this is funny. We're scaring each other.
It'd be kind of weird.
It would be weird if we did that around here. Yeah. But, although you used to scare Marilyn.
I always used to scare Marilyn. That was, I have video of that. It was so funny. Yeah.
Okay. But see, to me, that's different than like in my neighborhood, there's a house that has literally dozens of Barbie dolls.
Oh yeah.
Hanging from a noose.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Like they're like literally all these Barbies being hung under a tree. Dark. Like,
yeah.
That is, I feel like that celebrates death.
Yeah.
Like that's, that's not like if my kids are like trick or treating and, you know, and they walk by this house where all these Barbies are hanging from nooses.
Mm-hmm. But do you, okay, here's, okay, I know, sorry, we're not even doing this pot. This is, I guess it's tied in, but I'm like, it's an interesting choice of words, celebrates death. Like our neighbor has that too. It's funny. They have a few Barbie dolls and I actually kind of laugh because I'm like, it's just weird. It's just like a funny, I'm like, yeah, it's what you're choosing to, you know,
right.
But celebrates death. I'll bet you if you talk to them, like, and actually had a conversation, had them over for coffee and I think for the most part, it'd be like, oh, it's just, we're just, you know, we're having fun being dumb. And it's kind of the shock jock thing. Like, you know, sort of like, I don't, you know, okay, well, I know then, there's
is
a
it,
line.
Is it because actually I think the devils are real.
Yeah,
they're not funny to me. Like,
gotcha.
Like if somebody said, oh, it's hilarious. Like Satan and all these like dark spirits and like, it's really fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be like, oh, it's actually not fun because I actually think they're real.
Yeah.
They're only fun to my neighbor because the neighbor doesn't, I'm assuming the neighbor doesn't think they're real.
Probably doesn't think on that level about it.
I'm assuming that. I mean, maybe they do.
Yeah. Yeah. But. Yeah. I guess, but at the same time, you can obviously, I guess what I'm not arguing for is that we should never be discerning about anything when it comes to, you know, how we decorate for Halloween or how we dress up. Like, our kids, I don't think we ever let our kids dress up as like over the top evil. You know, there was always like Batman, I mean, not Batman, whatever. It was just like, you know, your classic, what kids dress up as, mm-hmm. not evil, like, you know, corpses or, you know, that kind of stuff at all, or not evil corpses, but you know what I mean? I see what you're saying. I guess what I'm saying though is like, if you take that line of argument, all the way down, it just it does become a bit this legalistic religious thing about, you know, it's like you're messing with something you should not be messing with. And in fact, Halloween itself is like, now we need to get rid of this holiday, and actually we should pick it is what we should do. I just feel like at some point you and I just probably are on the same spectrum or the same kind of thing. I'm just a little bit maybe, I don't feel quite as concerned about it as you do. And also, now to be fair, I'm sure it's progressed since my kids were young, and maybe I would feel differently. And I know that you had with Ella, I think it was, right? Mm-hmm. Who has nightmares and stuff. Like, I get that. That would really drive me nuts if she was kind of forced to go into something that like was really, really freaky for her and actually was going to cause her distress. Like, that obviously is where it's like, no, that crosses a line.
Right.
I guess I'm just saying I'm not ready to jump on that across the board with like scary stuff. A lot of times I'm just like, oh, whatever. It's silly and kind of, I wonder if there is, I'm just arguing that sometimes I wonder if there's actually power in that approach, in saying, yeah, I'm not gonna, that's not actually, that doesn't hold any power over me actually. And seeing that, you know, the Barbie dolls is kind of silly and kind of whatever, you know, just kind of walking away from it and being like, like in some ways that sucks the power out of a thing, I think, because you're just like, I don't know.
Maybe.
maybe not.
Maybe by the time we're done with this podcast, you'll think different.
Oh, snap. Okay. Well, that just got real. Okay.
No, it's funny. I, at the end of the night when the kids went to bed, I turned to Tanya and I was like, this is the best moment of the year because I'm 365 days away. Don't we have to do this again?
What did
Tanya say? Oh, well, Tanya.
Is she with you on it? Like, is she kind of like, yeah, I don't like this?
Tanya, has always been a little bit less emotional than I am.
Yeah.
So she's a bit more of a steadiness. She gets what I'm saying about like evil and darkness and stuff like that. I think she's just like, she's totally fine with them dressing up and getting candy.
So, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But she wouldn't be okay. Just like, I assume like you guys wouldn't, if they're like, I want to go as like, you know, the angel of death or something. I assume you'd probably be like, no, we're not doing that.
Oh, definitely not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I assume that. Yeah. I didn't assume that Tanya would want that. Okay.
Okay. So this is a good segue because today we are talking about the spiritual realm.
Yes.
And specifically talking about what in the Bible we see as what's called the divine council.
Hmm.
And so I'm going to dive into some stuff that I think is important to understand the background of the series that we're in. And so I've been kind of wanting to do this for the last few weeks, just to kind of talk about this is kind of all background stuff that like on a Sunday morning, I don't have time to dive into.
Totally.
So, four resources of where I'm getting this stuff from, and I would recommend these. So first of all, Sam Storms has a book called Understanding Spiritual Warfare.
Okay.
The Bible Project has a 7-part series called Spiritual Beings.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Heiser has a book called The Unseen Realm.
Okay.
And has some great teaching on this. And there are the Armor of God sermons by my professor, Daryl Johnson.
Yes. Yeah.
So Sam Storms, Tim Mackey with the Bible Project, Mike Heiser, Daryl Johnson, they all agree about this kind of biblical way of understanding the spiritual realm biblically.
Okay.
And so should we dive into it?
Let's do it. Yep.
Okay. All right. So so that in the Bible, sometimes in Christianity, we talk about the word monotheism, which means one God.
Mm-hmm.
And technically, that is not maybe, I don't know if that's the best word to describe what we find in the Bible.
Hmm.
That in the Bible, we actually find many gods.
Right, yeah.
In the spiritual realm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by that, everyone would be helped to see lowercase g gods.
Yes. Is that Old Testament and New Testament, would you say? Like,
yes.
It's prevalent in both. Yeah, okay.
Well, okay, so in the Old Testament, we have kind of the foundation for it.
Yes, yeah.
In the New Testament, we have words like demons,
mm-hmm.
Unclean spirits.
Gotcha. Right.
This kind of, but
gods, not necessarily, like, you know what I mean? That's like a different category almost, but.
Yes. Like the idea of the word Elohim,
mm-hmm.
The Hebrew word for God, Elohim. So there are many Elohim in when we read the Old Testament. Mm. There's many Elohim.
Okay.
But there's only one Elohim of Elohim. So only one God of gods.
Right. Yeah.
So when we say monotheism, it doesn't mean that there's like the planet and humans, and then there's just like one triune God, like Father, Son, Spirit, and that's it.
Okay.
Right? That there's actually many, many spirits, many Elohim. And the question is, are these Elohim, are these gods serving Yahweh, the God of gods, mm-hmm. or are they in rebellion against God? Mm. And so really when we see God's character, he's called the Lord Almighty. And in Psalm 46:7, we hear the Lord Almighty is with us. And that's Yahweh Sabaoth, which is Lord of armies. So there's this sense in which God is, or Lord of hosts. So it's like there is an entire group of spiritual beings that are God's heavenly staff team, you could call them, right? Okay. God seems to be pleased to use a heavenly staff team, at least when we read the scriptures, this is what we're learning. Mm-hmm. But there is only one supreme God, right, okay. who's in charge of this heavenly staff team. Now, so this heavenly staff team has come to be known as the divine council. It's like a council that gathers around God. Okay. And the key text for this is Psalm 82. And in Psalm 82, I just have it in front of me here, we read in verse 1, it says, God presides in the great assembly. He renders judgment among the gods. Now, I don't know if anyone's been kind of reading their Bible in the morning, but it's like, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Like God sits in a great assembly. Well, mm-hmm. where's this great assembly? And then he's judging the gods. Mm. Like who are the gods? And then he talks to the gods. Like in Psalm 82, he says, he's talking to other gods in a great assembly. And he says, how long will you defend the unjust and show partiality to the wicked? So now he's talking to other gods, telling them that they've been unjust. What on earth, right? Mm-hmm. So I'd encourage, if there someone's listening to this podcast, pick up Psalm 82 and work your way through it. Because he eventually says, the gods know nothing. They understand nothing. They walk about in darkness. All the foundations of the earth are shaken. God says, you are gods. You're all sons of the Most High, but you'll die like mortals. So these are like spiritual beings that are going to have a death like humans have a death. It's weird.
Yeah.
So it's like when you read Psalm 82, it's a puzzle. You're like, who's God talking to? Who are these people? Because some are wondering, are they earthly rulers? Are these humans? Or are these Elohim that are surrounding God? And I would go for that. Like these seem to be gods, Elohim in the spiritual realm that have somehow moved against God's orders.
Right. Yeah.
So right before we discuss this a bit, what I'm basically saying here to summarize is that God has a staff team in the spiritual realm. God shares his rule with other spiritual partners. And these Elohim are actually created beings. They seem to be created. They're creatures. And we can talk more about that in a second, but it does seem, and we definitely will get to this later, that some are working against God's ways. That there's at least a portion of this assembly that is moving against the ways of Yahweh.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. As you know, you and I have talked a lot about how we read scripture, right? So I hear this and I'm just like, man, that is a very literal translation, and not translation, but a very literal understanding of Psalm 82, right? As I hear it, it just seems to me, it's like, oh, I don't know who wrote this Psalm, David? I don't know whoever wrote it. Like,
it says the Psalm of Asaph.
Okay, so Asaph. So it's like, you're taking Asaph's like words very literally. Like he's describing this, you know, and I don't want to be accused of chronological snobbery, as C.S. Lewis talked about, but there is part of me, we know that in ancient times, there were different beliefs and cultures that weren't always correct and stuff. I guess my question is, how do we discern in a passage like this, where it's like, you know, like you're taking the approach that this is, you're actually taking this quite literally, and you're saying this is, so this is how we understand this, and this is what we can go by going forward. For me, I hear that and I'm like, okay, man, that's like, it feels like, I can choose to have faith that this, he's being very specific about what this is and how this, you know, what this looks like. Like at what point, because sometimes we look at things and say, well, that, he's probably trying to describe something that he knows exists and is out there, and he's kind of being poetic in it. And he's, you know, he's sort of, whatever, we've talked about rhetoric, we've talked about the different literary genres and stuff. My question is, why will you take this psalm so literally? Whereas there's other passages, let's say the beginning of Genesis, for instance, which I know is maybe that's low-hanging fruit in a way, like where maybe we don't take Genesis 1 and 2 as literally, you know, in terms of the one it's describing how the earth was made or formed. Maybe we don't want to go there. I don't know.
But, oh, no, I would say, okay, first of all, I would say, I think you will find that this teaching, we'll get to it in a bit, but is very relevant.
Okay.
So I think it's how, the more I get into this, the more I realize this is how the world works.
Okay.
So that's a
But
big
even
promise.
That already makes me feel like that's beautifully allegorical almost. Like, you know, when you're saying that, I'm like, okay, all right, I'm listening to that. Like, I like that idea.
Yeah.
But right away, I move away from the literal, here's what God, he has got these, you know, there's these 1800, you know, whatever it is, like these, all these gods that are listening to him. You know, like that's a very literal picture of an assembly in a courtroom and a, you know, as opposed to what you're saying, where I'm like, okay, I'm interested in that. Sorry, I shouldn't interrupt you, but.
Well, I'm just saying, I want to come to the text. I'm listening to this text. It's an ancient text.
Yeah.
But it's an ancient text that generation after generation of followers of God have come to and have found it deeply relevant. And so I'm trying to say, what is it about the writer of the Psalm of Psalm 82? As Asaph writes this, he is immersed in a Hebrew worldview that my modern secular worldview might initially clash against.
Hmm.
But if I give it time, and this is what Tim Mackey said, Tim Mackey said, like, I'm done trying to like make the Bible say what I want it to say. I want to just go back and just listen. I just want to listen.
Yeah.
So I would say maybe what we're trying to do today on this podcast is just go back and listen and say, what was the worldview of the biblical writers?
Mm-hmm.
What is then the worldview of Jesus and the New Testament writers? And before I judge it and say, it sounds too weird,
mm-hmm.
let's see if there's a way, let's see how actually it works. Not only what it is, but how it works. And I think both things end up being incredibly precise for today.
Okay.
I know that's a big promise.
Yep. No, I'm in. I'm ready.
Okay.
Hit me.
Okay. So, you know, examples of God's heavenly staff team would be things like the cherubim. Right? So the cherubim protect God's presence. They seem to be these spiritual Elohim, these spiritual beings that guard God's sacred space. They seem to be symbolic representations of creation, because you'll know like some like look like a lion or look like an ox or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the cherubim guard the Ark of the Covenant. And so they're these staff members that do that. Then there's these things called the seraphim. And the seraphim are these flying serpents, these snakes, flying snakes, literally. And in Isaiah 6, we read this. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord high and exalted, seated on a throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him were seraphim, each with six wings. With two wings, they covered their faces. With two, they covered their feet. And with two, they were flying. And they were calling to one another, holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is filled with his glory. Now, it's interesting because these are flying snakes, right? Seraphim. Mm-hmm. And some have wondered if the serpent that we read in Genesis 3 is a fallen seraphim.
Mm.
Like this is a seraphim, this serpent-looking creature.
Yep.
But that is now in rebellion against God.
Hmm.
So these seraphim that Isaiah sees are actually worshiping God, singing holy, holy, holy. But the one with Eve who tempts Eve is a fallen, or one that is rebelling against God. And so we have cherubim, seraphim, but what about the word angel? The word angel just means messenger, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is maybe one of God's staff members that is just sent with a message. And in the Bible, they seem to look like people, right? The angels are kind of always pointing back to God or bringing a message from God. They seem to support God's work in the world. And like, for instance, we see an angel freeing Peter from prison. We see the angel Gabriel telling Mary she's going to give birth to Jesus. Mm-hmm. Gabriel's name means God is my power. Mm. Michael is another angel, and his name means who is like God. And they seem to be just, the idea here is that they're just on God's staff team serving God. It's really interesting. In Daniel 10, we see Gabriel and Michael working together. Mm. So Daniel's like praying. And then in Daniel 10, we read Michael coming to Daniel. And he says, "Do not be afraid, Daniel. Since the first day that you set your mind to gain understanding and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard. And I've come in response to them. But the prince of the Persian kingdom resisted me 21 days. Then Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me because I was detained there with the king of Persia. Now I've come to explain to you what will happen to your people in the future, for the vision concerns a time yet to come." Sorry, I think I said this was Michael, it was Gabriel. So Gabriel comes with a message to Daniel, and he says that the prince of the Persian kingdom resisted him, that's Gabriel, for 21 days. But then Michael, another angel, came to help him. Mm-hmm. Because he was being detained by the king of Persia. That's interesting to me, right? Mm-hmm. So God, Yahweh, seems pleased to let Gabriel, who is God is my power, and Michael, who is like God, to do his work. And Daniel's praying in Babylon. And even though Daniel's prayers are being heard, Gabriel and Michael seem to be held up somehow by this prince of Persia, or this king of Persia, the prince of the Persian kingdom, who's resisting them. Mm-hmm. And I'll say more about that in a second. But there's this, like, anyway, so I'm just giving these examples of cherubim, seraphim, angels, these archangels, this Gabriel, Michael. These are all God's heavenly staff team working together. Any thoughts?
Okay. No, I'm still listening. I'm
still processing.
Still processing.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
No, it's cool. It's like, it is very, it's like, I remember reading, This Present Darkness. Remember that? It was years ago, but I remember it was all filled with this kind of stuff, right? That sort of drama and it was like a thriller reading this, you know, and the unseen world that suddenly became visible in his book. Yes. So yeah, no, it's fascinating.
Yeah. So a lot of work has been done by a guy named Michael Heiser. And so his book, The Unseen Realm, is really, really great. Okay, so angel of the Lord is a concept that we hit in scripture. We read about the angel of the Lord. It seems to be a bit of a paradox that God shows up. He seems to show up in a way that's visible to us. So like when you're reading the Old Testament, it says the angel of the Lord this, the angel of the Lord that, right?
Yep.
Jacob wrestled with the angel of the Lord, or the angel of the Lord shows up at the burning bush. And so a lot of questions have been like, who is this? Because it seems like it's a messenger from God, mm-hmm. but sometimes it's like it's God.
Yeah, because like even like when Jacob wrestles, the angel is sometimes, isn't like it became Israel.
Yeah.
And it's like, and Israel means
you wrestle with God,
right? Yeah, yeah. One who wrestles with, so it's like, yeah, yeah.
I hear exactly. Yeah. So there's this mystery here, mm-hmm. which I think is really cool. And I'll just read Exodus 3 because this is a moment where we're like, is that an angel or is it God? Listen to this. It says, "Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There, the angel of the Lord appeared to him." So hold that in your mind. "The angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush."
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the angel of the Lord appears to Moses in a bush, and God calls to him from within the bush. That's,
yeah.
Is it the angel?
Right.
Is it God?
Yeah, yeah.
And Tim Mackey points out this. He says, quote, "The angel of the Lord is the royal glory of Yahweh appearing as a human." Hmm. I love that sentence. Hmm. It's the royal glory of Yahweh appearing as a human. And it's interesting. Now, Jesus is never given the title angel of the Lord, to my knowledge. But Jesus seems to embody this role as the angel of the Lord, right?
Right.
It's God. But wait, it's a human. It's a messenger from God. No. It's actually God. Hmm. It's like
that same.
So God, through Jesus, is tabernacling among us.
Mm-hmm.
And when Jesus is transfigured on the Mountain of Transfiguration, he's this angelic figure. He's all in white. And so it in some biblical scholars think that the angel of the Lord, in a sense, is like we see it in Jesus, right? Where he's a messenger from God, and yet he's God.
Yes.
And anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. That's an interesting, I'm sure, I don't know if you've ever heard, I've never heard that before, that Jesus being called to or referred to as an angel of God. But you're right, the ascension, that's true, shining. Does it say he was shining like, it doesn't
at
say
at the transfiguration?
Angel. Yeah, transfiguration. Yeah. I've never heard that before, that idea that Jesus being referred to that way.
Yes.
I remember someone say, it's interesting, like the Jesus being the presence of God. Yeah, because that does seem like it's a bit of a difficult one, right? And we run into that lots, I think, even when we get into theological conversations, because, where was God when Jesus was dying on the cross, right? And it's like, well, God was in Jesus.
Mm.
But we also recognize, like, but Jesus is human and he prays to God. You know, there's that, of course, it's the Trinitarian mystery, right, in a lot of ways. And I remember one time we do that song by All Sons and Daughters, that God with Us.
Yeah.
And the bridge is, you are here, you are holy, yes. We are standing in your glory, in your glory. And someone came up and said to me, and this person doesn't, it's all right, he won't hear this podcast because he doesn't go here anymore, but he was like, we shouldn't sing that song anymore. And he was like, that, because no one can see God and live, or something. He kind of said,
Right.
And then I'm like, yeah. But then we had a conversation about the fact that Jesus was the glory of God. Jesus was the presence of God.
Yes.
And of course we know that Jesus actually always hung around with sinners, actually in particular, you know. And anyways, it's all very interesting.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. So now we've arrived at Satan and demons.
Okay.
So welcome to the depth. So in Genesis 3, right, we see this serpent that seems to embody rebellion, evil. The snake seems to be a spiritual being, right? That I said earlier in Isaiah, that connected to the seraphim. Yeah. Right? Could it's just a question, right? Could it be a seraphim that has kind of rebelled against God? A former staff member from God's throne room, right? That now is rebelling. The snake seems to be the spiritual rebel that wants to be God and rule the world their own way. And as we've looked at in the series, he's called the tempter, the evil one, the devil, which is just slanderer, the Satan, which is accuser, right? Yeah. So these are different titles. But then there are these kind of dark spirits that seem to be in rebellion against God. You could call them dark Elohim, these dark gods that are kind of rebelling against God.
Okay.
And Moses is the first to call these spirits demons. But they seem to be these lesser spiritual beings that are destroying people's lives. But one of the most interesting things is to start to think about the powers and principalities. And this is a term that we find in Ephesians 6. And I'll read Ephesians 6 really quickly. It says, "Finally, be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so you take your stand against the devil's schemes." So he says, our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. So there are these powers that you're like, wait, hold on. Is this talking about like a king or a president or a prime minister? The powers? Or is this like a dark force as well? And one of the things that I think I find very interesting is that the answer to that is yes. And this is where I think this is going to become very relevant here in our final section of this podcast, is that the gods, these dark Elohim that seem to be in rebellion against God, many of them seem to be behind earthly powers. So, for instance, think of Pharaoh in Egypt. Well, Pharaoh was a human,
Yes.
But behind Pharaoh were, you could call them, the powers and principalities of Egypt. So what really, so is this a showdown between Pharaoh or the gods of Egypt? Mm. And the answer seems to be yes.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Are they powers, or are they just human authority? Are they spiritual powers, or just human authorities, human or spiritual? Well, the answer seems to be yes. And I was really helped by Daryl Johnson quoting a guy named Walter Wink, who says, like, you can think of it as this equation. P equals, O plus I. P equals O plus I. So okay. O, you can think of the word outward. I, think of the word inward. So outward plus inward equals the powers, right? Okay. So there's an outward and an inward. Mm. So the outward would be, let's say, an actual leader or an actual company or actual people.
Right. Yeah.
Human structures. So you could even say maybe they're political parties, corporations, even churches, mm-hmm. right? And yet then the inward piece would be kind of a dark spirit behind it. So a spiritual force of evil in the heavenly place behind that thing. Mm. So like low-hanging fruit here would be like Hitler, right? So you have Adolf Hitler, but behind Hitler is like a darker power.
Right.
Right.
Yep, totally.
You could say Vladimir Putin today. You could say, I mean, you could just go through whatever. Yep. Whatever, yep. Whatever leader, is this leader have a spiritual force behind it, right? Mm. A power principality. So that when Paul is talking about the powers and principalities, he's saying, yes, like behind Caesar is a dark Elohim, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's why I think earlier in Daniel 10, it was a little bit like there's a king of Persia and a prince of Persia, right?
Right, yeah.
The idea there is that maybe the king of Persia is a human, but behind the king is this prince of Persia, this darker power, right? Mm-hmm. And so that, like, that's why Paul's saying we have to pray, because we recognize that in the world, whether it's, you can imagine this corporation that's doing great evil in the world, right?
Yep.
That it's like, is that just the sum total of human beings' decisions? Or is there actually a dark force behind it that we actually need to pray against, right?
Right, yeah.
And again, low-hanging fruit here would be like things that ideas, maybe even that are wrong, like like racism, right?
Yes,
like behind every, like, so there's actually a dark spirit that could be rebelling against God. Once the spirit, this Elohim, maybe served God in God's divine counsel, but now is actually working against God, and kind of rebelling against God's ways in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to give you an example from scripture in Isaiah 24. It says, in that day, God will punish the powers in the heavens above and the kings on the earth below. They'll be herded together like prisoners bound in a dungeon. So Isaiah is combining these powers in the heavens with the kings of the earth below. And so I'm really helped by Sam Storms, who quotes Mike Heiser, and he says this, quote, "It may not be wise to draw too sharp a distinction between celestial beings and earthly human rulers, for the psalmist may well have believed that the celestial gods exercise their influence on earth through terrestrial rulers."
Hmm. Right.
And so, so I want to say one final thing before I hear your thoughts, is just... there in Revelation, there are these beasts, right?
Yes, yeah.
And these beasts seem to be like, it's like we're like, okay, there are these like human rulers, but they seem to be like, are these beasts, one seems to be corrupt religion and one seems to be corrupt politics, right?
Right.
And we see that in our day. It's almost like there's this dragon in the book of Revelation and the dragon seems pleased. So imagine this is a serpent,
right?
A dragon is a serpent. Again, the dragon is this idea of like a seraphim that has fallen. But how does the dragon work in the world? And Daryl Johnson was the one who shared this idea that the dragon works through beastly politics and beastly religion, right? So it's the dragon is in the background. He's the Elohim. He's the dark power behind beastly religion and beastly politics.
Mm.
And there is nothing as evil as when religion goes bad, right? Yes, yeah. There's nothing as evil as when politics goes bad. And so it's the combined, it's these two beasts that wage war against the church, right? Mm. Or against the true followers of the Lamb, right?
Yes, yeah.
And I think that is so relevant to today, right? Mm-hmm. So that I say, and this is where I think it's relevant. Let's say Vladimir Putin, right?
Yeah.
As I go, listen, he's an earthly ruler, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to go to war against the spiritual forces of evil behind Vladimir Putin that is causing him to wreak horrible destruction, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a religious leader that's doing a lot of harm. I go, you know what? He is now no longer serving Yahweh, but behind him is a darker force. I don't kill him. I don't hurt him, mm-hmm. right? I actually go to battle in the spiritual realm saying, actually, this is what Paul, I think, is getting at. Put on the full armor of God so you can fight the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And right. that's why early Christians were pacifists, right?
Right.
We're not going to kill the human. We actually believe behind the human is a dark power that actually needs to bow a knee to Yahweh mm-hmm. eventually. And so I think this is incredibly practical. That's why I'm not called to shoot, to kill, to hurt a human being, because actually my battle is not with flesh and blood, but behind the flesh and blood is the powers and principalities.
Mm.
And so last thing I'll say,
yeah, yeah.
In the divine council, there are gods that work for Yahweh, and there have been gods that have now chosen to rebel against Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
And then I come in prayer and I pray, deliver us from the evil one and deliver us from the ones, from these powers mm-hmm. that would take human decisions and almost multiply them times 1,000, creating horrible evil in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool, man. That's good. Yeah. I like that. I think, I wonder if there's wisdom in being careful, how often and how specifically we name that thing when it comes to a human being. You know what I mean? Like, it's, I feel like there is low hanging fruit. Let's say Pablo Escobar, or like, we were watching this documentary on John Gotti, you know, like these, you're like, okay, maybe something like that. It's like, yes. But I can imagine this being abused by Christians, right? Where it's like, oh, that guy, man, like, you know what? And I don't hate him, but there was like dark forces behind him, the way that he was attacking me, you know, whatever, you know, and you're like, okay. It's that same thing that we talked about early on, I think in our maybe last podcast, the idea of looking behind every bush for, you know, for evil or for demons kind of thing, giving it too much attention as opposed to too little. So I feel like I really like this in a balanced approach. Do you know what I mean? Like, as opposed to saying, like, I just feel like if you're, because it becomes, I've experienced too much of the, again, kind of more the fundamentalist Christian approach to being like, you know, calling everything that they don't agree with, you know, that they don't like, or that kind of goes against their politics or their way of thinking, you know, worldview. It's like, that's like spiritual, like that. So that's spiritual warfare. And we got to, because suddenly when you do that, of course, then you're, it's like, oh, wow, okay, God's on your side. Like, man, it's like the deck is stacked. Like, you must be right, you know? So I guess what I like about this is to say, okay, I'm just thinking of a scenario in my head. Like, you know, this person at work is driving me insane. And man, she just like, she's always just, you know, whatever. But actually be like, okay, quietly between me and God, I'm like, there may be more going on behind the scenes, because it does seem as though some of those things that she has done is like actually really cruel and nasty. Well, I'm just making up a scenario, you know, so I'm going to quietly pray about that actually, but I'm not going to talk to my friends to be honest, I mean, unless you're discerning, like, to be, let's join in prayer and let's pray for this person whose name is blank, you know, because I actually think that there's, you know, she's clearly, there's a dark force behind her. You know what I mean? Like, you can just see how it right. gets weird quick.
No, I could see how that could get weird. I think what I like about it is that it just says nothing is neutral in the world.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
So, totally. So all of us need to walk in humility going, what are the systems in the world, the governments in the world, the powers in the world, the corporations, even the ideas, what are the ideas that are not neutral? Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I say like that, an idea is not just like it sits there neutrally. It actually, it has the power to shape someone's life.
Yes. Yeah.
Or that corporation or that government or that church or mm-hmm. whatever it is.
Yeah.
Nothing is neutral. And so the question is like, are we on our knees for our own church?
And for North ourselves, Langley. Actually.
For ourselves,
yeah. Maybe that's where it starts, right? To say,
am I being duped?
Am I being duped by, yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so obviously you can see how, like, today, like, that's why I think we're talking a lot about ideas around gender, around sexuality, around all kinds of things. I mean, even take an idea. I try to, let's play right and left here together, is like even like how you care for the earth, right? Like there's, you have an idea of how to treat the earth, right?
Right.
And it will actually shape you for good or ill, right? Mm-hmm. And the question of how we treat God's creation is like, is there a dark power that would want us to treat this place like garbage,
right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And that for generations, for people to have health concerns
over
toxic air, toxic water,
totally.
Horrible, you know, do I think that like, it's just kind of like, oh, we can treat the world how we want. And it's just neutral. It's like, yes. No, actually
right,
God gave you God gave you the mandate to steward the earth.
Yes.
And like, that's like that is for the creator, like the creator longs for you to live that way. And as I've been thinking recently a lot about the body, right? Like God gave you this body to steward, and there's an idea like that might be inserted that like actually you can hurt your body or try to change your body, right? And I think I know that it's a very, you know, it's a big topic these days, but like I've often seen how creation care and stewarding our body are actually part of the same conversation in terms of how are we called to actually steward what God has given us. So anyway, what I'm saying is like those are ideas that actually can have a huge influence on our lives, and they're not neutral. And so I think I would say to the person is, don't start to call someone, you know, well, you're just influenced by the demonic. Just say, well, that idea is not neutral. So how can we take captive every thought and make it obedient to Christ?
Right.
And just say, let's discern this. Mm-hmm. And if it's not good, if it's leading us in places that are really not great, we need to like take it captive, make it obey Christ, who's Lord of Lords, Lord of hosts.
Yeah. 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 Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. No, I like that idea. Like nothing is neutral. And I appreciate, bringing in like stewarding the earth, for instance, like, you know, cause I think again, in this conversation, what I hate about this conversation often is that it always ends up being about Halloween, you know, or about like it's always like it's like the low hanging fruit as opposed to, things like, again, as you said, stewarding creation, you know, how do we take care of our bodies? How do we understand the other? How do we, you know, all those kinds of things that actually, like you say, are not ever neutral kind of thing. So yeah, that's great.
Well, I know we're out of time, but can I just quickly, just if I go back to Halloween, like, that's the fear I have is that we take this pleasant, wonderful little thing where we dress up and the kids are cute and we do whatever, but that actually that someone like, that there is like a, there is nothing, it's not neutral. So there's, what are the darker Elohim or spirits that would take a night like this and introduce someone to the Ouija board and introduce someone to something that is a fascination around death or a fascination around the demonic or something like that. And I would just say like that's where I would just say, I totally get fun around the block and candy.
Yeah, totally.
It's just more like, I don't see Halloween as neutral. And I wonder in what ways can I put on the armor of God and just go, okay, I just want to make sure that like a night like this is not used for evil.
Right.
I don't know.
Anyway. Yeah, totally. Yeah. And again, you could say the same thing. Oh, obviously Halloween is, again, it's a blatant, in some ways it makes it really easy to talk about because of the fact that it kind of, in a way, there is like lots of death imagery and, you know, like kind of ghouls and zombies and whatever. But as you say, it could also be used for, as we know, it can be used for wonderful, beautiful Jesus type things. Right. And I guess in that way, it's not neutral, as you're saying, right. It could be, for sure, it can absolutely be used as for evil and then also for good, hopefully. So, okay, that's good. We should leave it there.
Can we end with Jesus?
Yes.
Okay, here it is. We're ending with Jesus.
I know the answer for this one. Yes.
So we end with Ephesians 1. Jesus at the cross defeated the powers and the authorities in the spiritual realm. And Paul writes this. He says, I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened in order that you may know the hope to which he's called you, the riches of his glorious inheritance in God's holy people, and his incomparably great power for us who believe. That power is the same as as the mighty strength he exerted when he raised Christ from the dead and seated him at the right hand of the heavenly realms, far above all rule and authority, power and dominion, and every name that is invoked, not only in the present age, but also in the one to come. So we want to end with Jesus winning. Mm-hmm. His name is higher than any other power, any other dark power. He's far above all rule and authority, power and dominion. So Jesus wins.
Yep. Love it.
Okay.
Okay, man. Good podcast, Matthew. You were on fire. Hey, North Langley. We love you guys. Have an awesome rest of your week. We will talk to you soon. See ya.
See ya.